Dan, welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, thanks for doing this. I know you're a busy guy, work life, all sorts of projects, dad life. So happy to get it going. We talked about this for a while. We'll talk about what you've been up to recently. Have to start where I start always. Have to admit, I don't know how deep you're into sneakers or not. I do this podcast now because I want to learn about people, not necessarily because of their sneakers, but let's start there.
Yeah.
What's on feet these days? What do you like to wear?
I mean, not to sound like the typical father, but I am rocking a lot of New Balance lately. In general, I have probably like six pairs, then I'm loving all the colorways that have been coming out lately. So I'm also loving just how they feel and fit. So it's hard. I got size 13 wide feet, so like I need a proper shoe in general at this point in my life. So it ain't about fashion half the time. And I wear shit kickers, man. I wear big boots. It's kind of this time of season, I don't even bother wearing sneakers in this weather, especially with the kids running around. I'm always risking a scuff on something. So it's boots, man. It's all boots, and the Balance is for when I have to literally chase after them in the snow or something. But yeah, I haven't bought anything as of late. I did get a crazy custom pair of A1s from CC Customizes for like Laylo's closing date. They're incredible. They're hand painted. They have like literally every detail of the bar all over the shoes. We put it on our IG. There's like a full viewing of the shoe itself, but unreal. Like, I had no idea what was going to be on it. It was kind of like we met, and I got her this kind of hookup with size. And she was going to do a custom shoe for size, and with that she was going to do one for Laylo, and yeah, she like brought them like literally the day after the last night, and like opened up like an unveiling of the box. It was like lit up like the bar, and they were crazy. So I haven't worn them. I don't know if I'll ever wear them. They're too nice.
I was going to say that sounds like a display piece. They're your size though?
They're my size, which is crazy. So I don't know. Maybe like a wedding. I don't know. It has to be like something where I know I'm indoors the whole time and I'm not going to be messing with them at all.
I wanted to ask you about New Balance. I remember my dad was size 12 wide with New Balance, and not to compare you to my dad, but he always had trouble finding, he loved New Balance, but he always had trouble finding pairs that were, had some style. Like, are you able to as a wide, like, do you have to go wide, or can you wear like a regular 13 and
I
get
can
like
wear
a
it. I gotta pound them in. Like, I literally have to, like, they have to become my shoe, which is like, that's the issue with 13s, like, in general. Like, the shoe just never looks as good as like the proper silhouette of like a 9 or 10. Like, they just look better. That's why I don't know. Over time, I just started not to care so much about like, I have to get in line for a shoe. Or I was just like, honestly, whatever I find today, I'm getting, as long as I like the colorway. And they fit. It's like the fit is like so much more important at this point from in my life with shoes. But yeah, I don't know. It's just funny. I became a dad, and New Balance in general kind of came back. So I was just kind of following the signs, and then all of the jokes about it. I was like, honestly, I don't even care if it's cliche. Like, the shoe and the company has just elevated so much. And even when like Kawhi was here in Toronto, I felt like even that renaissance of like changing the guard of like that brand as well, especially in Canada. I totally just bought into it. I was like, yeah, I'm a New Balance guy now for sure.
it's interesting you brought that up. I don't think people give that, not necessarily Kawhi, but what was happening then, enough credit, because he's so soft-spoken and he's so low-key, but he was still rocking and people were still seeing him. We were still making the run and he was wearing whatever, tracksuits or whatever. People were seeing
Yeah.
it, and it's worth something, whether it got hyped then or not. I think it took a little time, right?
It just was perfectly aligned with his brand. Like, and whoever was in charge of his brand at the time just killed it. Like, right out the gate, fun guy, the intelligent choice. Like, they just both worked so well. 'Cause he was like this robotic genius of basketball. And then, like, New Balance was like, it was like they're like the fundamentals of shoes. And he was like the fundamentals of basketball. It's like, this is like literally the perfect guy for this brand. And yeah, just the text, like the font alone was like, yeah, it's clean, it's simple. This is Kawhi. Kawhi doesn't want designs on a shirt. It doesn't, like, it just made so much sense for that company to take him on. And I was just, yeah, I completely bought in, and I was always chasing them. And now, like, even when I look online, I mean, I'm almost in shock of how, well, I'm not in shock because I knew they would pick up, but man, the prices for balances are getting crazier by the day. I was so used to paying, you know, like, I guess 120, but like now the nicer ones are, they're shooting up there. So I'm just kind of have to keep searching. I mean, I'm always in the, if I find a 13 and it doesn't matter what company, I'll probably just get it. Cause it's like, okay, it's here. They got a 13. I'll get the Adidas Shelter, or I'll get like the classic, you know, low cuts, whatever. It doesn't matter. But it's all about casual wear at this point for me. Like I can't be dressing up in nice shoes. I got two kids. So I got to give their, like they want their shoes now.
Yeah, I think the timing with COVID, everyone just wearing sweats and joggers, you know, half the people wearing slip-ons, but then like when they wanted to wear something, you know, it made a lot more sense to wear a pair of New Balance than a pair of like high-cut Jordan 1s that you're going to have to lace up when you're really just
Oh, I know.
not even allowed to leave your house, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how I feel. That's why the boots would just became like the kind of the staple in my house. Like I just always had a pair of boots at the door, and it was much easier for me to just slide on and just go, like, you know, not if, once you don't care, like once you stop caring about how the boots look, you're just like, they're meant to get dirty. They're meant to get, like, I want to beat them up. Then it's like, That whole thought process, oh, don't step there, watch where you're going. It's like, no, I'm walking right through these trenches. I don't give a shit where I'm going. Yeah, it's better. And then bar life, you're spilling shit all over the place. So you can't even wear nice shoes to work. So
You were talking about chasing shoes and, you know, making a transition. Was there a phase where you're wearing other sneakers and you were looking for, you know, different type of things, whether it was, I don't know, Jordans, you said shell toes. What was there an earlier phase, or was it kind of
earlier like phase for key? Sure. I mean, growing up with Slam magazine. So Slam was always like where I would see the shoes for the first time. They're always in that back, those back few pages, they would have the next round of shoes that were coming out. That was kind of my initial kind of inside the sneaker culture, because when I was younger, those stores weren't as accessible when I was a kid. I grew up in Calgary for a little time, and in that time, that's when basketball became really strong in my life. And then, yeah, Slam was like, getting the Slam was always like such a big deal. Like whoever brought that one to school, we just all sit and just crowd around and just look at the articles, who was on the poster. It was just such an iconic magazine for us when we were younger. But the shoes then were always like, oh my God, like I can't wait. What, one day I wish I could get these. And all I remember, the biggest shoes I ever got that were like a big deal to me were the Peyton, the gloves that zipped up. I had the foam passes, like the pennies, and Vince's and ones, those that he wore in the dunk contest. Those are like my three favorite shoes. They're gone now, never to be seen again, because I wear shoes. If I caught on earlier, I should have just taken better care of them. But I always wore them and eventually had to retire them. They're all gone now. But those are like, in the beginning, I was just like, I want to wear that player's shoe. I want to wear that player's shoe. But yeah, now, yeah, it's just, I mean, you know, age just creeps up. You're like, it's all about comfort for me now. I just like, in my back, I'm tall, I'm 6'3". So like, it's just all about like how I'm moving and movement and how quick I am to jump. And, you know, I do play basketball. So like, I want to be as limber as possible. And I feel like, yeah, there's just some shoes that just don't agree with me anymore. Like I'll wear a pair and like the next day I'll be like, shoot, like I have like a crazy pain in my heel, or, you know, something's wrong with my back. And I'm like, oh, it's cause I wore those the other day. It's just different. But I did. I originally had a huge love of sneaker culture. But yeah, it just became, you know, expensive for that matter. And I just have other things that I'd rather spend my money on that I would collect more so.
What do you wear to hoop in these days?
I got these like knit Kobes. I think they're like maybe 6 years old, but they still wear like they're new.
Nice. Yeah, I wear Kobes too. And I played last night, and for whatever reason, my team didn't leave the court. It was almost 2 hours, and you know, even though they're like my favorite, most comfortable shoes, I'm still feeling it today. There's not much you can do other than stretch and try to survive. But it's cool that you still play. You mentioned that basketball was a big part of your life when you were younger. Yeah. Were you wearing those N1s and the other ones you mentioned to hoop in, or were they more for fashion?
Oh, there to hoop. I mean, it was always to play ball. It was never a fashion thing for me. I think it was like I wanted to be seen on the court with those shoes. It was more of a status, but also like a like, oh, this guy obviously balls. And then always going up, we had this park, Lindsay Park in Calgary. It was the best like pickup games. Even at a young age, you could just show up and play with older guys as well. And everyone had kicks. It was like, you know, that was just the mentally, it just did something to you. It made you feel like you could just ball a little bit better when you threw them on. And I even see that with my eldest son now. We finally got him like a first pair of just nice Nikes. They're nothing crazy, but you just see his mind elevate. Like he's like, oh, I'm gonna kill it today. And I'm like, yeah, buddy. Like there is something there that just makes you feel better. It's like it's the shoes. It's got to be the shoes.
You got it. Absolutely. I was gonna save it till later, but you brought it up. So one of your kids hoops now, or?
Yeah, my son Levi plays now. So he's been doing this great basketball camp. It's by the lakeshore. And yeah, it's been really fun to watch, and just the improvement and the like true passion. Like he actually loves ball. He loves watching highlights. You know, he's playing constantly. He's like, the net on his door in his room, like you hear him banging around. Like it's just, he's really absorbing it, and he's starting to learn about all the players. And now he's like this big Scotty Barnes fan. Like he loves his raps, but he like loves Steph Curry because he's such a game changer. So it's so natural. I'm not pushing anything. Like it's really cool to just see how much he loves it. And yeah, he's starting to play now. So the teams are like the league is going to like get much busier next year. That next year it's like jerseys and like practices. This whole kind of journey has just been learning the game, getting comfortable with, you know, how to play the game, where to set up. So he's getting all the fundamentals now. But I mean, when they do the scrimmages, I love it. I'm sitting there like, shit, he's really good. Like I'm not even like trying to be like a biased father, but I'm like, he is very good. He's got good handles. You know, if anything, I feel like he needs to get like core, like he needs to get his stance better. Like, you know, kids are a little floppy. Like he needs to get that, like, you know, if you set a pick, I want you to like take a pick. Like I want you to take it. Don't fall over. But yeah, I haven't like yelled or anything on the court yet, but I'm very close.
Oh man. It's hard. How old is he?
He's 7.
Yeah. So I remember, so my son's 11 now, and he's been playing more serious for a few years now, and I've been good. I've been really, you know, I was super competitive. I probably told this on the pod before, when I was a kid, playing hockey mostly, and I got in trouble. I was one of the better players on my team a couple years, and I got in trouble because I wanted more ice time, you know what I mean? And I was already getting the most ice time. I was like, give me more, you know. I'd get in trouble, I'd sit on the bench because I just wanted to win. I was so competitive. So when my son was young, I didn't want to put him in. I didn't want him to do anything because I knew he had it in him. Because you know, it's just I just saw it. So I didn't want him to do anything. And you know, he's still very competitive. But I don't think I said anything to him in like 4 years, like other than good job, buddy, you know, teamwork, all that positive stuff.
Yeah.
And one day he had an exhibition game. It's funny, it was All-Star weekend. All-Star weekend, we had tickets to go see the Thursday night the women were playing, and it was that event, and he said, I want to play ball instead. I said, good, do you want to play ball?
Okay.
And something was off about me that day, and he had a tough game. And then after, it was just an exhibition. It didn't mean anything. He was fine. After the game, I was like, come here, I want to show you something. And like the gym is emptying out, and I'm trying to get coach him. And I'm just like, listen, this is what you're supposed to. And all of a sudden, it was like I changed for the first time since he was like a little kid. I changed my whole mentality. And of course, he's like, what's going on? And he reacted negatively. We had like a little blow up. And it was like, it's so hard when you're an athlete, like you talk about, you play ball, and it's so hard to like just zip it up and just let your kid have fun.
Yeah.
And you talked about the little guys having fun. Yesterday, there's a U10 or U9 team that plays before us when we have our men's game. They have a practice, and all the kids wanted to stay on the court after practice. You know what I mean? None of them had anywhere better to go.
They love it.
Yeah, it was such a refreshing thing, because I don't want to say anything bad about the 11-year-olds, but once they're 11, you know, maybe they're practicing harder and they're exhausted, but they got other things to do. They got their phones, they got their video games. And like when they're seven, it's so pure. It's like what you said. Like I remember during COVID with my son, all he wanted to do was go out every day, dad.
Let's live and breathe it.
That was it. And like, it's only natural for things to change, even though he still loves it. He loves watching. It's just other things are in his life. He's got more of a social life. He's got his phone, he's got his games. It's pretty much technology is what I think
it's changed. 100%.
But it's
nice. I've been watching that too. I've been really like, you know, we've been really good with all of that crap. Like he got a Nintendo Switch for Christmas. But even that is, it's only NBA 2K. He's only playing NBA. He has all these games and I thought that's what he wanted, but it's just NBA. Like he's doing the Kobe challenge. He's doing the Kobe challenges and he's like screaming from downstairs and I'm pretending I don't care. Right. Cause I have to be like, no, dad, even though I probably played all those games before, he's just like, oh, like I scored 39 and I did it. And Pau Gasol got the big block. And I'm just like, yeah. Anyways, come up for dinner. Like, I don't want to care. I can't care. Because if I give him too much, then he'll be like, this is, I have to keep reminding him, like, that's not real ball. Just like letting you know. It's awesome. I love that you're learning a little bit about history, but that's not ball. And don't get upset when you lose. Because he'll literally lose. And he'll carry that. And I'm like, buddy, it's a game. It's a video game. It's not even real life. And if you can't even do this in like a video game, how are you going to react to a loss in real life? So,
yeah
it's tough. It's been in increments. We only give it a little bit. He only has it on weekends and it's only for like an hour or two and then it's gone because he does have actual ball on weekends. So yeah, it's funny. That's exactly what it is, right? It's that initial true love for anything, whatever that is for anybody, and then life and like electronics and then all that social, you know, upkeep becomes all of this crap. So yeah, we've been really like terrified of cell phones and all that. I mean, I'm just gonna go as long as possible until he actually needs something like that. I'll just get him like a Motorola, like a flip phone or something, just to be like, this is your phone.
Oh, it's funny, my not to get too sidetracked, but my son, we got him a phone because sometimes he goes, hangs out with his friends, and to get a phone number, they want you to get, you know, 60 bucks a month. So we got him a phone and he's on our data plan. It doesn't cost us anything more. And he said, I need a number. Everyone's exchanging numbers, right? I'm like, I let you get Snapchat. I let you get Discord. There's a million ways, FaceTime. You got all the data you need. I'm like, why do you need a number? He's like, I said, okay, so here's what you can have. You can have the number. And then you could call your friends all day. They don't want to talk anyway. They want to text and message. And I was like, you could have the phone number but then you lose all the data. And he's like, wait a sec.
Data. There
so
you go.
It was an easy decision for him. So that has got at least pushed back, but he's in grade six and I want him to start taking the bus by himself and all that stuff. But it's cool that, you know, everyone, I'm not trying to give advice. Everyone has their own path to parenting and technology.
Oh, for sure. You write your own book, right?
And sports and stuff like that. That was just that my observation that, you know, even me who tries so hard, I slip up once in a while. And in credit to technology, my son didn't have any interest in baseball. He got the show, the game, and baseball is maybe number one, number two sport. Started from the video
it's
game.
I coach baseball as well. It's definitely the same. It's baseball and basketball. It's like, I couldn't be happier. It's like all I want to do with them as well.
It's crazy. My son's playing baseball where I grew up playing, and it's like such a trip. But let's get back on track. I want to hear, you know, we were talking about sneakers. So before we talk about what else you're doing, curious, I mean, do you have a stash or is it pretty much what you talked about now? Do you have things that sit in the closet?
Yeah, it's pretty depleted at this point. I mean, we're always purging. There's so much crap in our house. It's become, again, like I said, like there's so many things like I would collect or keep. And when it came to like shoes, it's like, you know, I wear shoes. I don't keep them in boxes. So I wear them. So once they're gone, it's donation or, you know, move on to the next pair. It's much like music, right? Like if there's a new song out, I'm going to listen to that song like for a couple months. And it's the same with like, I get a new pair of shoes. I'm going to wear those shoes for days on end. I'm not going to switch it up I probably have like four in my rotation, and that's it. And those are actually the only shoes I would have. So yeah, the collection is pretty much gone. Would I love to buy myself more shoes all the time? Absolutely. I mean, I see them everywhere all the time. And I mean, especially at Lalo, everyone was rocking something nice and fresh all the time. I was just like, damn, those are crazy. But yeah.
Speaking of music, I know you've been up to a lot of things, music being one of them. Can we start there?
Yeah.
Because I'd only been to Lalo a few times, should have been way more. We've talked over the years, but my time there, you know, I know occasionally you take the stage in quotes there when people are lucky enough. And I was lucky enough, I think, on the 7th anniversary. But talk about what you're doing now, and then maybe we'll go back to your sort of history in music, or we could go either way.
Yeah, I mean, so the history in short was I was a performer. I did used to play and record for a long time, maybe like 10, 12 years. And then when the bar opened, I just kind of like put it on the shelf. Levi is just born at the time. It was just time for a transition and a change. You know, it was more like, you know, like music is fun, but I don't really see it as like a paying career, and it's more of a passion. And I needed to just switch things up, and that's why I opened the bar. And then over time with Lalo, and as it was like, you know, the evolution of Lalo, as it got more and more in the arts and the music community, I just started to find myself going back to what I already was about in the first place. And near those last 2 years of Lalo was really like where music started to get elevated with live. We had a lot of live shows. We were working on projects with other artists. Like, it became like, oh, like this is now a music hub. And as soon as we closed, I had this kind of opportunity. And also just because everyone I've met over time, a lot of people started to find out I was singing and still playing, that I was getting offers for like, yo, come to the studio, yo, come by sometime. People are sending me beats, like just to sing on top of, or just, you know, I'm getting random artists just to ask me to listen to their stuff and just give an opinion. And so just as of late, I've been in the studio with Junior T and just that whole collective. And it's just been fully rejuvenating. I've always played. I've always sang. I just, you know, I haven't like really considered doing it again. I mean, I'm at 39. Not that that matters how old you are. I've just really realized I'm still very good at it, and I really get a lot out of it. And that's the biggest, I think, take. Like, I do it once a week now. It's kind of like my night out. I get to just go to the studio for countless hours, and it's sometimes there's really no plan. There's nothing like in like written like, oh, this is what we're working on today. It's really just a collective of people hanging out, and a song will just kind of occur, and people will start writing. And then we're getting all of this product at the end of the night, and we're like, yo, like this is good. This is nice. Like, we should get this guy on this track. We should call her up and she should play a trumpet on this. And it's just been this incredible kind of, I'm just feeling super revived in the sense that, you know, I am a creative. There's a lot of things I just want to do and make and be a part of. And to be back in music is super blessed, because, you know, I have so many talented friends and so many talented people I've met in the last few years. And it's just so cool to just kind of share that experience more with everybody. Whereas I've always been kind of on the outside looking in at Lalo. And I know everyone's talented. That's why I always booked everyone to be there, whether a DJ or a performer. But now that I'm like able to like actually be there in the creative form with everyone, it's just like, I don't know, I get a lot out of it. And it definitely feels like it's exactly where I'm supposed to be with just wherever I decide to do next. I just feel like music is always just going to be the one thing I'll always go back to. And it was really what sparked everything with Lalo in the first place. Like, it's always been about music for me. It's just like I'm working on like a very like little EP, and the goal for me right now is just get all of the foundation down. And then everyone that has kind of been in my life that I really respect and admire their work, I'm going to have everyone featured on my record. And then it's still going to kind of be under this Laylo umbrella where I release something that's like the Laylo collective, but it's like, it's my record. And then it would be cool because no one really knows I sing unless you actually been to Laylo. I mean, no one really knows how much I care and do it on a basis. So yeah, it's just crazy. It's just funny because you put something on hold, you put it on the brakes, and then for some reason, you just like, I'm just back in it. It feels great. It's once a week, right? It's just like, it's like my basketball run. It's just, I know I need it. It's just like I'm flexing a muscle that I don't want to lose and I have to keep up with that. And it makes me feel healthy. I feel like, you know, reset every time I leave that studio. And I definitely, you get like crazy energy from it. Like even leaving with like 8 people in the room and you all create something together. And then June will always send it to us to listen to. And the drive home, I'm just like fired up. It's like 1 or 2 in the morning. And I'm like, man, this is like, gosh, I love the feeling. So yeah, it's been great, man. And so yeah, I don't like know exactly where it's headed, but I have somewhat of an idea of what I'd like to do with all of these tracks.
Nice. So music, when you opened Laylo, that was a big part of it right from the get-go.
Yeah. Vibe was like it could be a shitty box, like it could look like absolute trash inside, but if the vibe was there, like that's how I feel about any bar I go to. I mean, if the music is on point, I'm gonna chill there for a couple hours. But vibe was like so important to me, especially like when the beer scene and the brewery scene at the time, which was, you know, let's say like 10 years ago, was very cookie cutter, and still some are, like they're very cookie cutter, they're very like, you know, they're following like a template. And for us, I was like, you know, like I want to be like a hip hop spot. Like I want to go to a bar that has like, you know, dope stuff on the walls, but like the Roots is on and like they play a whole Roots album, not just like Things Fall Apart, Erykah Badu. Like, it's not the only song that they have. Like I was like, what if like people started centering in on records and like full albums and like theme nights, like a Fife night, a Tribe night or whatever. Like that was like my main source of like, I bet all the heads will show up if we just stick to it consistently. And that was kind of the beginning thought process of like, let's introduce hip hop heads to craft beer. Let's introduce craft beer nerds to like hip hop culture and like good music and like just a better appreciation of it. So yeah, vibes were like number one. I was like, no matter what, we have to have dope music on all the time. And I want to put someone onto something every night. There's someone should leave asking me what the song was, or I want to see a Shazam phone up in the air at some point just to look down and be like, fuck yeah, I got that person. They're in.
Nice. So did it sort of start off with sort of you guys playing behind the bar and then like DJing? And then like, when did live music become part of it? Or was that from the beginning?
Well, we would do listening parties for people's like album releases. That was kind of like in the very early stages, which was like, oh, this kind of dope. Like, you know, DJ spinning, there's someone hosting, they're previewing their album. I'm like, we should do this more often. So that kind of sparked a few things. The DJ aspect, obviously, like just with all of our friends that we already knew who DJed, but then like, it was amazing to see the evolution of that too. And how many DJs started coming to us to want to DJ there. And then just like kids who've never DJed in front of crowds, who we would always give them that like opportunity because we just could feel the passion right off of it. So the DJ aspect was always a big thing. But the live music, it kind of like spiraled into like, we had like a Dilla event like maybe 2 years ago with Reverse, and that was like magic. Like that was like just a magical night, very tight group of people like all in one room, but it all worked and it was very, I felt like a movie. And I feel like maybe I had like 2 or 3 nights like that. I had a jazz night one night, and it was just like this thought, like I'm just standing there at the bar and I'm like, gosh, this is so good, like we should be doing this way more often. It just kind of spiraled into, you know, asking all of these jazz cats like, oh, you're really good, would you like to play here again? And like, oh, I can't play, but the drummer has a quartet, and then someone else had a quartet. Like everyone everyone had their own band, but they all played in different groups. And I just started booking those. And then, you know, that idea of like, you know, hip hop and, you know, everything about where that music stems from, and then just trying to get all the influences of hip hop now. And now it just became like, okay, now it's not just like, we're not just like putting on music on an aux and it's not just a DJ anymore. Now it's like, we can do anything we want that just has that kind of vibe. It's the same vibe, but it's just, you know, from different genres. And it became kind of a staple. Then I was like, okay, let's book this like twice a week. And it became to the point where now I'm having other people reach out to want to perform. I mean, it's just trickle effect. It was just really cool. Like, it was, again, everything was very organic with Laylo. I never was like, oh, I have an idea. It was always like, this happened once and it worked really well. Let's try it again. Okay, let's work on it in a different way. But it was always something I wanted. I just never thought the room was good enough. I was like, I don't know, does this make sense? Like, it's a pretty strange room to have like a live band. But it really worked. And then there was Listening Room, Shadi Ahmed, like, she hosts Listening Room and Acid Jazz. And then we started getting other companies involved, and it just became like, yeah, I'm just so grateful. Every night, like, I'd be behind the bar and Migs be there. We'd just be standing there laughing. We're like, this is crazy. Like, the talent in the city was just unreal. The last year specifically, 2023, like, the talent in that room on a weekly basis, like, unreal. Like, just unreal performers. Everyone was just so humble. And then they get behind a drum kit or a piano, and you're just like, face melt. You're just like, this is crazy that is happening here in this tiny ass bar in Toronto. But yeah, the music was always something I wanted. I didn't really know it could reach that capacity until it did. And it just happened randomly. It wasn't like I planned it. I wanted it, but it just came to us. And it was, I think, just because the camaraderie of musicians and artists all the time who just came there to hang out. It was just, we just talk about it. Everyone's just talking, we should play here. Oh yeah, I mean, maybe, I don't know, but I don't really have the setup. And eventually it just became that. It just became, I guess, just, we just kind of spoke it into form.
Yeah, very cool. And I'm glad it's still going on, you know, whether it's in the studio with you or special events that, you know, maybe coming up and things like that. We have to talk about beer though. Because yeah. I also see that you're busy with that, getting things cooking up.
It's coming. We just brewed about, let's say, 6,000 cans of our Belgian Golden Ale, the Zenith. This is basically like our coming out party for Laylo Brewing Co. So we're dropping the brewery because we don't really have a brewer anymore. So we're going to be the Brewing Co. So we're changing that around. And this will be like the first time, like, all those hip hop logo flips are gone. You know, it's like, it's time to, like, you know, just kind of be the big kids in the beer scene now. So it's like, we've always only pretty much been available from Laylo, and then like speckled in like only a few spots in the city. So this is kind of a big deal for us, just to kind of see how far we can actually take this. So we're really excited. You know, the new labels are great. It's really just about us now. That hip hop connotation is kind of gone from the labels itself, but there's mention of it on the can. It's just more about the community now. I feel like that's kind of what we've become, is this art community. It's not just embedded in, you know, this hip hop thing. It's like, let's just put it in under a huge umbrella, what Laylo is now. And yeah, it's exciting. It's like, Colin is an incredible brewer. He's a very modest and humble brewer. But over time, you know, those staples that we started in that space, in the kitchen for that matter, became, you know, staples. Like, real, everyone wanted specific beers at that point when they came, and they were upset if that one wasn't on tap. So yeah, we've narrowed it down to four. And we're going to do probably releases every 2 or 3 months, probably realistically every 3 months. And we'll try to get through all four this year. And then from there, we'll try to get larger distribution. But it's really like, this is like the testing time. This is like, you know, door to door, get it in the spots that I've already want to take it, but then it'll be a lot of like hit the pavement and kind of, you know, hi, my name's Dan, I'm from Layla, if you haven't heard from us, like, it's kind of, you know, it's a whole new world. It's like something we've thought about doing, but now it's kind of the time to, like, you know, let's just step it up. Let's see if we can make it work. I mean, we can do everything else we want to do. So if we can get this beer moving, I mean, it's a game changer for the company and the brand, and it allows us to, you know, throw events in the city, work with other artists. And if, I mean, it, kind of the world's our oyster. If the beer moves, then we move with it. So it'll be really exciting to see what happens. But yeah, we chase the beer next week, and we will be canning within the next 3 weeks. So it'll be available by late March.
Oh, wow.
Nice. It's coming. Yeah.
Looking forward to it. You know, beer was one of the ways I found you guys, but I think it might have been us talking. I can't remember, about gear, maybe about hats, about making stuff, making probably small batches, sharing sort of advice. Maybe it was Ebby, like we were talking. I know he works with, I wanted to shout him out and mention that you guys did some collabs, and I don't know if you're still working, but definitely, you know, became a fan of your beer, your product. But I don't DM you about your beer because I know I have to wait or I have to get, but I always DM you about your gear now, whether it's your hats or your t-shirts. So let's talk a little bit about that, because that's something that I know you're doing ongoing, and you have. Talk about like why, and why you like that, or why it's important, or why your you know, your community likes it.
Yeah, I mean, COVID definitely put me into a kind of time warp of, you know, what do I love, and what am I most passionate about, and if things go south with whatever's happening in the world, like, what am I going to do next, and how am I going to keep this company alive? And what I always realized was I was doing merch, but I wasn't doing it on any large scale in the beginning. Like, I was doing like pretty basic stuff. I do like a hip hop logo flip, and that was kind of the beginning stages. And I was like, yeah, let's just print like 20 tees, and they were gone. But I didn't really think much of it. I was like, I'm not really a designer. But then I had some great friends who would just, you know, hype me up. They just tell me like, no, you are a designer, and you do have great ideas, and if you just keep bringing these ideas to the table, we can help you execute them. So I got really confident with using weird apps on my phone that I could like janky and make designs on my own, and then I would send them to my designer friends who would clean them up for me. And that was kind of the beginning stages. And then I just kind of started playing around with the ideas of, you know, what do I like? Like, what's something I would wear? And I started, you know, I was always into fashion, but I guess a bit of imposter syndrome. Like, I was like, I don't really feel like I have this skill. I think I may have an eye for it, but I was just trying to convince myself I could do it more and more. And then, yeah, the proof was just in the pudding, because when we started releasing things and they were moving, it was one of those, like, you know, I remember calling me like, just be like, so these are like really moving, right? I'm like, yeah, it's crazy. Like, he's like, so you gotta, like, we gotta factor this into like our budget every month now. I'm like, I guess so. I'm like, you think? I was like, should I just keep making stuff? He's like, dude, I don't know. I'm always hyping Colin about the beer, where he's always like, I don't know, it's just like not up to par. And he's always hyping me up about the clothes, where I'm like, I don't know, man. Like, it's not like we're like a real street brand. But then over time, you know, even to this day, like, I'm always amazed at how well things are moving. Sometimes I'm kind of like, you know, doing deliveries even still out of my house after we've closed. And it's just such a great feeling to see it all be so well received by everybody. And then, yeah, just stepping the game up with photography and the people that are involved in Lalo's kind of family. And it's easy to like always keep everyone, you know, I can always support everyone throughout the brand, which works really well. So it's always this like cross branding with like a musician or a photographer or another brand, like Ebby, you were saying, like we did a great collab with Northside as well. But yeah, it kind of all started with there. And then Yeah, I was just getting more confident with it and following other brands that I admire and creatives that I admire, and I'm just getting more confidence. It's really just confidence with being able to pull the trigger on an idea when you think of it, or at least write it down. I mean, I saw this great I actually posted this thing yesterday. It was Jeff Staple, and they were interviewing him about, like, how do you make a decision? Like, what do you, because you do, because he releases stuff like crazy. Even like Kith, like, I'm just like, how do they do it so often and so confidently, and there's just no pauses? And he's just like, I just write every single idea down in my phone. Like, anything I ever think of, I just put in my phone. And he's like, I have like 3,000 notes in there. And then you just kind of let the universe kind of unfold. And like, if someone brings up something like, what's sick? Like, Outkast is like kind of back, or, it just, you're like, oh shit, I have an idea for the Outkast I've just never done. And I go back to my phone and I'm like, you know what? I think I'm supposed to release this right now. And like, Andre 3000 released that flute album. And then like, everything just aligned. I was like, I think we should do this. I think we should totally do this. And it's been, yeah, it's all a learning process, but I really enjoy it. I definitely get a lot out of it. Again, I still deal with the imposter syndrome with it, but God, I love seeing people in public wearing my shit. It's such a cool feeling. It always looks better on them than it does on me. It's just, I sometimes I'm just like, yeah, I love when people message me and they're at a show and they're like, man, so much Laylo in the house tonight. And I'm like, man, I don't know, it's just crazy. It's just such a cool feeling to know that people are wearing it not because of beer. They're wearing it because of the community and who's behind it. And it's been cool. I'm just always trying to think of something new, but not overdo it, obviously, because I'm a firm believer in like not making too many things regardless. So I think it's cool to have like very limited runs of everything. That way everyone knows like they have a limited edition piece and it feels like it's theirs and only so many get it. But yeah, it's a trip, man. The clothing has just become, it's a part of it. It's fully a part of the company. Like, it was an idea during COVID, and then it just became like, oh, we got to drop stuff even more so, more often than beer. Yeah, it's crazy.
Yeah. And you know what? I think a lot of people have this experience, when they have streetwear brands or brands in general. And I know that's not that your only business, but it's like, yeah, we need to make some t-shirts. Let's do 20, like you said. Or you get some hats embroidered by your homie, and it's like kind of like low scale. And you don't want to make it too big, and you don't want to get stuck with extra product, but you don't want it to be like lose that kind of luster of, I have something special here. But then I think, at least with me, you make these t-shirts and like whatever, they're usually probably not that high end at first. And then, the natural evolution, it's like, okay, well, what do I want to wear? And
Yeah.
not everyone needs $100 t-shirts, but there's a balance in between of a $20 printed
Oh yeah.
online and $100 where you could find it and say, okay, this feels good, this lasts, people could wear it to a show, people can wear it out and represent the brand and look good. And it's the same thing with hats, right? Like, I know we have the new era rep, but it's like, doesn't always have to be a 59th a fitted, but it's something nice about like taking it to that level where it's like there's not too many better, if any, hats
No,
than
it's the hat.
like the hats you guys made last. You up right as soon as I saw them, I was like begging you, and they're perfect. Like they're nice and clean, and they're really well made, and the design. And it's like, and it's almost hard, right, to go to the next one. Like, what are we gonna do next? Luckily, you
I
guys keep it
know.
clean and simple. And I hope there's something else. I don't know if you could share if there's something coming in the works, but
I got some good stuff coming. I mean, the L's with the vines. We're probably going to be dropping some fitteds with the vines this round as well.
oh.
But I am going to bring back the Yankees because it did so well. So because a lot of people asked for that Yankee colorway, so I'm definitely going to bring that hat back. I'll probably do a forest green version of that hat as well. So those will be coming. I know there's crazy delays in the U.S. right now, so we probably won't get it till the summer. But the order's already in. And then
Oh,
I'll
yeah.
probably do a black one with just a different patch. We were talking about maybe the beer vibes and homies because it's so colorful, and maybe putting that on the side patch. So though I'll have three of those for sure. And then like as the beer rolls out, this is kind of becoming the like the beer logo now with the wheat wrapped around. So I think that'll be like a new round of hats for like the fall, because it'll work really well with like those fall colors, and I can drop them. So yeah, not necessarily a surprise, because I feel like I'm really working with a lot of the same elements right now for the brand. Anything new would be within collaboration. I'm talking to one artist. She paints like these awesome paintings of just prolific artists we all love, like Lauryn Hill or Sade. It could be anybody, but like just getting those onto shirts with the Laylo branding and like anything like that in the future is always going to be collaboration. Like anything new will be like an idea I have, but I want to bring someone else in to execute together. But for like Laylo specific stuff right now, I mean, the L's are strong, and the Laylo logo, I've really grown to love it a lot. And then we have a lot of cool stuff in the chamber, which I'm really excited about with bigger brands this year. So I'm really excited to get that ball rolling, and there will definitely be like a really big event this fall, which I'm really excited for.
Nice. Well, thanks for sharing a little bit of that. It gets me, not only excited about the hats, but definitely, those last two. I got a few other older ones, but they're definitely great. So you put me down, as you could
probably
imagine. But I want to talk more about music, because you talked about how, you did it for a long time before you opened the bar. Was it something that you were, passionate about as a kid, or were you like me and just like listen to hip hop and listen to different music, or were you already into it when you were young?
I was heavily influenced by my parents. My dad's a big blues guy, and my mom was always like top 40s, like Elvis and Doris Day. But there was music going on in our house constantly, and I have older siblings. So my sister and my brother were always bringing home stuff that I was privy to at a very young age, which like a lot of kids in my day were not getting, like Tribe or Pharcyde or Mobb Deep. Like I was coming to school and no one knew what that was. If you didn't have an older sibling, I mean, you'd be completely clueless. So yeah, heavily, heavily influenced. That movie mid-90s, when I watched it, that opening scene, like that was me. Like I watched it, the kid's in his brother's room. He's, grazing his hands across the CDs, me putting on the headphones and the poster. And I was like, dude, I totally went in my brother's room. I touched all the shit, and I literally opened it up and I put it all back meticulously before he came home. And I remember, like putting on Wu-Tang on my earphones and just being like, oh my God, this is crazy. Like Matt's listening to this stuff. That's so bad. And then I'd be like, I want it again. I'd be like, shit, I want to hear the next song. So yeah, hip hop, blues was huge. Like my dad is, Stevie Ray Vaughan, BB King, Clapton, all that was just like in our house all the time. So I was heavily influenced. And then I went to camp as a kid, and that classic bonfire, kind of moment where I was like, yo, I want to play guitar more. And, it just became an addiction. I got a guitar like the following summer. I want to learn songs. Maybe for the wrong reasons at the beginning. I mean, you just want to impress a girl. But then, as time goes by, you really want to write a song. Like, you really want to write your own song. You want to figure out more chords. And then it becomes like, oh, I'm going to write my own songs. And I'm going to play live in like other shows. I want to play a venue. I want to play a venue one day. And I did some recordings. I had a band like in 2008, and then I lived in Australia for a bit and played some shows with another band, and then when I came home, I started doing my own solo stuff, which I go by Bonfire, my last name Bonifaro. Microsoft Word always spell checked my last name to Bonfire, and I kind of took that as a sign, and it was where music all started for me in the first place. I still write. I'm constantly writing. I find things randomly that inspire me, and sometimes it's just a new artist that I kind of connect with, and I feel like I can write just like them. It's been a constant. I mean, I am a music nerd. Like I collect a lot of vinyl. I am looking for new music every day. I'm privy to new artists a lot, and it's just like it's like I'm singing in the house all the time. I never stop like humming something. I'm in the car. I'm making playlists constantly. I have a playlist for every mood. Like it's crazy. It's just like in the end, curating Laylo constantly, right? Like if the aux is on, it's all like that's all mine. And I'm trying to get everyone on to something new. I love the feeling of giving someone something new. You've never heard of any artist before. And it's not just hip hop. It's like everything. Like I love all music. I'm very obsessive when it comes to that. And it's Friday today. So like I'm already looking for new tracks that are standing out. And I try to curate for the next playlist that I release on the Laylo radio. So it's an obsession for sure. I mean, it's a constant. I love it.
You know, when you talk about your family influences, obviously that's huge. I had the same situation with my brother. He's 10 years older than you. So it wasn't Wu-Tang. I discovered that on my own. It was like gangster rap and stuff. But it was that same situation. Like, oh my God, yeah. I was listening to this. And it was like, and it was just.
Yeah, mom's going to kill you. Mom is going to kill you.
It was the same thing. It was tapes instead of CDs, but it was the same experience. But what I was going to say was that, you know, you talked about your family and those influences, your parents. And, you know, I don't want to say you can hear that in your music and what you play in what you played in the bar, but it's obvious, right? I mean, like those things don't go away, right?
It's like what resonates. And, you know, I've had a friend, my friend Brian, he was in one time and, you know, we were talking about like Drake or something. And Brian just like says outright, he's like, yeah, but Dan, you don't listen to that crap. You like music. And I was like, oh, true. I guess that's like, that's why I'm being so like judgy. It's like I can be so critical on stuff I don't like because maybe I don't hear like instrumentation or like the words just aren't like, you know, resonating. But I am like, I really try not to be a snob, but I am like, I'll walk in the place and if I don't like the music, I like literally like, I show it on my body. Like people are like, yo, Dan is not having a good time. I'm like, I'm sorry. Like I'm literally trying. It's just like this music is like literally affecting my soul. Like if I don't like something, I really like, I was like, it hits my core. I'm like, God, like turn this shit off. It's like, I'd rather just talk in silence. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. You know, to bring it back to kids, because my son plays guitar now. He just switched over. He started his teacher as like a big ukulele guy. And he started on the ukulele because he was little, but now he wants to play guitar because he wants to get electric. And you know, he's quite into it and he's cool. Serious, but he still listens to like what I would consider shit rap and pop music. And we're listening, you know, in the car, I'm just like, can we please not listen to your playlist? And, you know, it's really hard to accept the new music that I don't like. And there's also good new music, but the stuff he's listening to is the same stuff the kids are, you know, and at least there's hope that when he sits down with the guitar, he can't play that.
That's it. Exactly. That's where, like, whatever those influences are, yeah. You never know what's going to come out of them in the future. So, I mean, and I was the same. Like, I was, at that time, like, I was probably listening to, like, you know, I guess specifically it was, like, Far Side, Beastie Boys, Sublime, De La. But then I picked up a guitar, and I was, like, straight folk. I just went straight folk. I became, like, this bluesy folk guy, and I was, like, I kind of like sounding like this. So you never really know what your actual musician, like, look or voice, like, what your voice truly is and what your style is until you, like, really just start tapping into, like, trying to sound original and trying to not try to force anything to sound like somebody else. And then you kind of know right away if you actually do want to do this. Am I just doing this because I just want to sound like this person, or I just want to make the same music as it? Or do I actually like have like some sort of inkling to like be different, to change, to find like my true voice that no one's going to be like, oh, Dan's just trying to sound like, you know, Eddie Vedder because he just loves Pearl Jam. It's like, no, you got to change the way you sing. You got to find the way, like, you can't be just chasing music for the sake of, well, this is my favorite artist, I just want to sing like them. You got to literally rewrite their songs. You have to, like, if you're going to cover something, like, you got to make it your own. It's cool to see. It's cool to see anyone develop like that. It must be really fun just to see your kid play. I can't wait for him. Like, Levi's playing piano, but he's not immersed in it yet. But he likes to sing, so who knows?
Yeah, and my son does that too. He's a little shy in front of a crowd, but I tell him it's kind of like the same thing with the hoops. It's like, you do it because you love it, not because I'm telling you to do it, although kind of making him do music because I think it's important, and make him play basketball because he needs to get exercise. But when it comes to like what he's listening to and what he's doing, the best is like kind of like when the kids are just there playing and they don't want to stop. It's like when he just grabs his thing, when he grabs his guitar and he noses around, and I could catch him just like singing, and he's in the zone. It's that pure kind of like what you're talking about, like find your own voice, find your own vibe. Last thing I wanted to ask you about, though, because you hinted at it, and I always ask people who don't have big sneaker collections or big hat collections if they do collect anything. You hinted that you might have some vinyl. Is that what the space is saved, the collecting space?
I mean, yeah, essentially, like there's only so many things I can keep. And again, like once the kids came, like really purged. And anytime we moved, which we moved a lot once, like in general, there's always like I hate clutter. Like I really just hate clutter, and I really have trouble, like I don't know if it's ADD, OCD. I just have like a lot of trouble with like a lot of things. That's why like I love hotels. Like I love going to hotels. It's just like bed, TV, washroom, perfect. Like this is I love this place. But yeah, I do collect a lot of vinyl. I've toned down because I mean it's like it. I should be giving some away at this point and try to sell them. Actually, I just joined Discogs, which my buddy JR Weidman, he just put me on Discogs, and man, I'm like. I do it every night now. I just like pour a glass of Jack and I'm just like scanning every barcode. I don't know if you've heard of it. It's like it's pretty dope. You basically just input your entire vinyl catalog onto this app, and it like tells you the value of your entire collection and how much like each record could potentially go for. Like from like low range, mid to like the highest it's ever sold for. So I've just been doing that recently because there are a lot in there that I'm not pulling out anymore. And from the most part, like with the kids, like I try to get them to pull records out. Like just pick anything, whatever you pick, we'll listen to one side while we're down here drawing or whatever it is we do in the basement at this point. Because yeah, I want to be as influential with music as it was for me. I think of all the things that like make me who I am, like to this day, and it was always been like the number one kind of predecessor for like me just becoming me, Dan, like and everything I love about myself, it's always been music. So I really want that to be something that my kids take from me in the future, and then eventually I want them to take the records. So I feel like that's why I'm really collecting them now, and I'm just trying to basically curate two little music heads, but I want them to like have their favorite records, and then one day they get to like choose, like, okay, I'm getting this one, you're getting this one, and the rest is like, if they don't like it, like I'm just gonna toss them it soon because there's a lot in there that it doesn't need to be there.
Yeah, when I'm sitting in this room, I got all these sneakers and hats and junk and paraphernalia and all this stuff, and I look at my records, you tell me about Discogs, and I'm like, I don't think I could sell even one that I haven't listened to. Like I could probably sell any sneaker, but like my 36 Chamber 12 inch, like no way.
No
Like
way, no way,
my
no.
None of that stuff, even though it's collecting dust, and like my son may never listen to it. It's just like, I've also had those the longest. Like I've had them longer than any sneakers. Like they're more attached to them than anything, and they don't take up that much space. So
No, I mean it's not bad. I have like six crates, but that's like a lot. That's like borderline like 200, 300 records. And it's like a lot for a house that, it's a small house. So but yeah, I'm just trying to, those are the things I want to keep. And the newest ones that maybe I've bought in like the last 10 years, those are like the ones I've like been meaning to buy. And I'm like, those are the records I want to have in the house that will be played constantly and for a dinner party and be involved when the kids are downstairs. So yeah, the vinyl is definitely what I collect. Aside from that, like I have a lot of hats. I mean, I do have a ton of hats. That's probably my other addiction is I do buy a lot of hats. It's a problem because I don't know where to put them all either. It's becoming like a thing where like how do I take care of these and like don't let anyone screw them up. So
Can't help you
yeah.
there, but you're a
No.
musician, so you need the vinyl. That's an easy
Yeah.
one. The hats, no way to justify them except for you're wearing them. I always see you wearing a hat, so at least you can justify it
Exactly.
that
Just keep them
way.
on. Just keep them on.
Nice. Well, Dan, I'll let you go. Thank you so much for doing this. I'm sure we could continue and maybe we'll do it again soon. But we'll definitely keep in touch, of course, and talk. But thank you for doing this. Thank you for sharing everything. I know a lot of listeners will know about Layla, will know about you, but some of them won't. So I'm sure they'll be happy to have learned a lot about you.
Thanks, man. Appreciate being here. And I always value just the companionship and you just talking over these last few years, just relating on dad and hip hop.
For sure. And it's a luxury to do this for an hour or something when, last time we talked was in a crowded bar. So I get the luxury of getting to know people as well as my listeners. So yeah, thanks a lot and good luck with everything. And yeah, we'll talk soon.
Thank you, bro.
Business, rambling, friend. I got business, rambling. I got friend.
Down in the woods today.